Okay, welcome to another segment of Common Ground. This is a unique one for us. We're in a remote setting here, Sherry.
I don't have to do all my stuff.
No, you don't have to post. You don't do anything. Oh, yeah, we are live. I forgot. No, we're not. We're actually broadcasting this one, and then we're going to place it live on Facebook Live. And welcome to this show, our 19th episode, Chris and Julie, of Common Ground. And as we discussed previously, our show is about discussing the issues, not debating the issues. I know, I think I saw something on your post there that you were getting up on your debate skills, but this is not a debate. We're going to discuss.
A lot of people like to call it a debate. I call it the constructive conversation.
And that's really what it is. So Common Ground, we just like to bring in two sides, and we want to hear and let our audience decide. We discuss, you decide. That's our tagline, and it's been working fairly well. We average somewhere around 2,000, 3,000 listeners per show. We're going to see how this one does as a broadcast, right? As a tape. So we'll see how it goes. But I would like to welcome, we have two really good guests, Julie Luton, is that pronounced correct? And we have Chris Betts. Julie, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your position on this issue?
Okay, so first of all, I'd just like to say thank you for the opportunity to discuss this really important issue with everyone and to your listeners. As you said, my name is Julie Luton, and I, just to give you a brief bio, I am the daughter of a retired minister and a retired school teacher, so I have the service gene pretty strongly in my family. I've been in the McKinney area about 19 years now. I've been married to my childhood sweetheart for, this January will be 30 years.
Wow, congratulations.
Thank you. We have two great kids. I have a sophomore at UTD, and I have a daughter.
Good school.
Good school. He's loving it. Go UTD. What is it? Comets? I think it's Comets.
Is he a business major?
He is a business major.
Good school.
Yeah. And my daughter is in high school at McKinney Boyd. She wanted me to make sure I did say she was in high school, not just in school.
There you go, Mom.
So yay me. Business-wise, when I was in the business field, I did a bunch of different industries. I was in insurance. I worked for the Chamber of Commerce. I did a bunch of nonprofits. I was actually a small business owner. I had my own company for a while. I really loved that as well. But I did get out of the corporate world and decided I wanted to follow my heart, which was service. And so I've served over the last, many years now. I've been serving on local and national boards. I've got real involved in the schools. I've been PTA and PTO president at multiple schools. And yes, there is a difference between PTA and PTO.
Yes, there is.
And when I was doing that, I became involved in the ISD citizen bond committees and the TRE, the tax ratification elections.
That's a different show, Julie.
Right, yeah, I know.
We're talking about Prop 4.
Yeah, I know. Not
somebody
not
said TRE.
Not school funding. But it's super important.
I know, and I got
really involved in it. So that kind of led me to become passionate about local and state politics. So that in turn led me to run for state office. I ran for state representative in 2018.
And I have to commend you on that. It's a tough go.
Thank you. It was it was one of the best experiences of
against
my whole
Sanford,
life.
Right?
Against Scott Sanford in HD 70, which is the McKinney area and the surrounding areas, Prosper and that kind of thing, Salina, a bunch of different ones. And I was unsuccessful in that election. However, I still stayed engaged in politics, and I've been real engaged, and I'm currently the president of the McKinney Democrats.
So where are we at on Prop 4, Julie?
Okay, Prop 4. It's a really important, a good segue there. It's a really important issue for all of us. Constitutional amendments in general should have our very undivided attention, and only about 10% of our population is going to vote, or less. So my thought on the Prop 4, and I'm just going to give you the overview and then it'll be Chris's turn to talk. I think that the messaging and the marketing behind this particular proposition is borderline deceptive, but they're giving us a false choice. The choice that they're offering is vote for Proposition 4 if you don't want a state income tax. And what they are not saying, or it is not communicated strongly, is that we already enshrined in the Constitution, the voters must approve any state income tax. So my comments is this proposition is unnecessary. It is poorly worded, which I can get into later.
Oh, yes, we will definitely get into that.
And financially risky for our state, not to mention a few other issues. So bottom line, I'm done.
There you go. So Chris, give us a little bit of information about yourself and your position on Prop 4.
Yeah, I don't have nearly as impressive resume as Julie does. no, she's got a lot of awesome stuff. And Julie, I do want to say thank you for all your work with CASA. That's a really great organization, yeah. And that's super, super vital. I have a big appreciation for you serving like that. That's great. So my background, so I grew up actually in Kansas City, moved to Texas about 7 years ago, as soon as I got out of the military, and now I'm re-enlisting.
And thank you for your service, and yes, thanks thank again. You. That's right, I read that.
Yeah, they told me I was too fat, so I've been losing weight, so I'm getting back in there. So we'll see how it goes. So, but now I'm getting back in cybersecurity, and I work cybersecurity my full-time job as well, in a large infrastructure project. I have two dogs at home. I live in the Denton County area up in Aubrey, kind of a newer growing area. Love the environment. I love Texas. Texas is like, for the military people, like Texas is like the motherland. Like that's what we all know. That's the place you go. Like Texas is the holy land.
I didn't know that.
Everybody I ever talked to, like, no, Texas is where I'm going to retire, blah, blah. And so my first taste of Texas was in San Antonio, Lackland Air Force Base. So I just met the people, met everybody. And it was just like, Texans are, this is a different breed of people. It's a lot of really good people that just genuinely care about each other in a whole different way than anywhere else in the States. And coming from Kansas City, it's kind of more of a hermit mentality. Like you go and do your thing. But Texas, like, say hi to everybody, you wave. Like, if you need any help, someone will pull over and help you. Like, it's just a really good neighborly family.
And what's your position on Prop 4?
And my position on Prop 4, I am for Prop 4, the banning of the state income tax. And I think that we're going to have a really good conversation on this. So, Julie seems very intelligent, and she's very polite and very sweet. We've had some conversations before this.
And that's what we like. We like for our guests to meet each other prior. They were actually stuck in a vehicle for a while before we got
into it's cold outside.
When you're cold and you don't have, coffee or hot chocolate, you know, you have to get to know each other, right? You weren't sharing any blankets or anything.
And what's not fact?
That would be weird.
That would be weird. I'm just saying, okay? I just want to make sure we're on the up and up.
Steve wasn't in the car, so we were good.
So, Chris, the position that I read up on it, like you guys have. So we already do ban income tax in the state of Texas, and this is a constitutional amendment. So, I mean, once it's voted on, from what I've read, the legislature still has to vote on it, right?
Before we get started, because it kind of goes to what you're saying, we need to make sure the audience and everyone in Texas understands what is currently in place and what is being suggested.
I could read the proposition.
And do that, because I'd like for the audience to understand what the real change is.
Okay, so the way I read it, it's called the HJR 38. Okay, just make sure I'm reading the right one here. The constitutional amendment prohibiting the imposition of an individual income tax, including a tax on the individual share of partnership and unincorporated association income.
So would one of y'all like to break down the difference, or because I can, but I'm just curious if one of y'all wanted to explain the difference of what's in place and what is being added or changed.
Sure. I'd be happy to go for it. And then you can add in whatever you think I left out. So the first part I think that's important to understand, which Steve has already mentioned, is that already any voters would have to approve a state income tax. What would happen is that the state legislature, a simple majority, would have to vote to present it to the voters and get their approval. So that's the first thing.
Before it'll go on the ballot. So the simple majority of the Senate
would have actually to vote
has
to, put it on
to
the ballot.
Vote. And then that gets on the ballot to then go to the people to be voted.
But doesn't the legislature vote? Representatives first, and then it goes to the Senate.
They vote it to put it on the ballot, and then the people vote yes or no. And so what we're considering with Prop 4 is
changing. There are a couple of things that Prop 4 changes, but when we're talking about the majority only, it changes to 2/3 then.
Right.
So 2/3 of the legislature would then have to vote to put it on the ballot to be approved for.
Right, as opposed to simple majority, which is 50 plus one.
Yes.
Right. And then that still goes to the people. And then we get the super majority, 2/3. It's still going to go to the people for a vote.
Absolutely.
Right. I just wanted to make sure and get that. Mm-hmm.
So it's not actually a ban. So that's the first thing. It's not a ban because...
Get it, girl. Take us there.
Because a ban is absolutely something that cannot be overturned. I mean, it can never happen.
I thought a band had instruments. Oh, that's a band.
Clever.
I thought it was something you wore.
Dad joke.
So you're saying that it's not a band, even though the people that are for the proposition are saying it is a band. So you're saying there's a problem in connotation?
like a more extreme prohibition.
She's saying you can still amend it later. It can still be amended later.
Well, I thought that was the big position why people were against it, because they felt that it couldn't be amended once it's constitutional.
Well, you're talking connotation of a word, a ban. I mean, it's a very simple word to use, and it's good marketing language. I mean, that was part of what I did was marketing. So I appreciate the marketing portion of it. But when you're talking about a word, when you talk about ban, to me, a ban means it's never going to happen. Right. And obviously, it could still happen. However, to get back to your point, Steve, it would be if you think about the makeup of the legislature now and how hard it is to get things done, it would be much more difficult to get 2/3 of the entire legislature to approve anything to go on to the ballot.
Well, before we talk about the actual proposition, that's why I wanted to ask Chris, because it narrowly it was approved in May. So how are we going to get that 2/3 over the top for the whole legislature to approve it? I think Leach and Fallon were the authors of that bill.
Right.
They thought it would be a greater majority when they voted, but it wasn't. So is that a concern of people that are pro Proposition 4 that, okay, the people vote for it, then it's going to go back down to Austin, and then it's not going to pass anyway? Or is it just going through the formality of saying, hey, the people want this, and hopefully that the legislature will see that if the people do vote for it by a large majority, they go, well, it's the people's will, and we get it done. Is that what you think will happen?
No, I agree with that. I think that the bigger part of this is also making sure that the constituents get their voice heard more specifically on an issue. And so being able to have this go to this before it becomes to a larger vote, before it even gets to that point of us voting on actually having income tax or not, we have we get to check the temperature of what the populace thinks. And so people across the board, it's a bipartisan issue. A lot of people move to Texas because they don't want an income tax. And states that do have an income tax aren't doing better than Texas in a lot of these ways. And so people see this entire situation. They have arguments on both sides, like Julie's mentioned. And so a lot of this is trying to basically create a larger prohibition of it, because it's not really a ban. There's anything in the legislature, anything constitutional can be amended. There's always a vote that can be done. So there's not really a ban there, but that's all, colloquial wording and stuff like that. It's all politic wording, and politicians like to kind of do that stuff. But I agree with Representative Leach and Senator Fallon on, kind of making this a harder way to do that, because I believe that the no income tax is what makes us thrive in a lot of ways. And so,
Let me ask you, oh, sorry.
No, you go ahead.
So Julie, are you against the state income tax or just against Prop 4?
Well, I'm only arguing against Prop 4 in particular. However, I would also like to add that no one is presenting that there should be a state income tax right now. I mean, it would be political suicide to do that.
That kind of goes to what I was going to jump in while I go and ask. Let's talk about the elephant in the room. It's being said, and I
did lose a lot of weight,
and apparently Chris did too.
I know.
So.
Sorry about that. Do we not think this is a little bit of a consequence to a certain recent election for a certain presidential candidate that killed some of the counties in Texas? And, we're a little worried about that whole blue and purple for Texas. So let's put some things in place. So
wow,
in
that's
the future,
a different perspective I didn't look at.
Oh, really? Because that's what everybody's talking
can
about.
Can I lead right. you just, can I lead, read you a quote? Directly
sure.
from
Representative
Leach.
Get in.
Leach.
Do it, girl.
Jeff Leach was quoted as saying, we are protecting the people of Texas from what the Democrats want to do. And I'm just going to add, as president of the McKinney Democrats and fairly involved in local and state politics, I haven't heard anyone saying that anyone wants to put forth a state income tax. However, with that being said, my position is this. We are here, we're talking amongst ourselves, we're giving our voters an opportunity to make themselves heard on issues. We get the choice as to what kind of revenue we want to get from our state. Right now we have our biggest sources are sales tax and property tax. So if we're giving ourselves the opportunity to state what we want our revenue streams to look like here in the state of Texas, why are we trying to make it more difficult for our children and our grandchildren to make the same decisions for themselves? Our economy may shift. It probably will shift. Things are changing rapidly every day. So the opportunity for our children and grandchildren to look at what revenue streams they need is being hindered or handcuffed, however you want to put it, by this proposition. So that's the other reason.
Yeah, that's
I'm
a good point.
It.
And how do you respond to that, Chris?
No, I think that she's trying to make sure, all Julie's trying to do is make sure that we have the option in the future. And we talked about this off the show, and like you and me agree on the idea of bad governance. We think it's a terrible thing. And And I'm 100% with that. And the situation is that we have tons of bad governance. So putting in more limits and more boundaries on government to be able to not have that bad governance, I'd much rather have the boundary there to limit bad governance than to streamline good governance, but have the ability to have lots of bad governance in there. And so being able to kind of put a limitation on the government to let the people's voice be heard and make it harder to make a very strong situational change for every Texan across the board, I think that's something that we should have. I think that we need to have stronger barriers for all that stuff. And like you said, it's Prop 4, and we're not trying to, it's not going to outright ban the tax, but adding an extra layer of protection for taxpayers' pocketbooks, I think, is a great thing.
A concern of yours, Julie, that having that added protection, that it is harder for future generations to turn it over? I think, is that the major concern that the people that are opposed to it?
Well, I actually have three major concerns, but the first, I mean, that is certainly one of them. And I would say, if we want to trust our voters to vote their pocketbooks, then let's let the voters vote their pocketbooks. And instead of what we're doing, I think, I mean, I totally get what you're saying about wanting an extra layer of protection. We do want, I mean, Texas is very well known for its good tax climate, and I wholeheartedly agree with that. However, rather than putting the burden or putting all the power on the legislature to decide when the taxpayers get to decide about whether they're going to have a state income tax, why don't we just keep keep the Constitution as it is already written and let the voters decide, let the legislature, simple majority, send it to the voters. And then we trust the voters to make the decisions that is best. And I think that we're taking the power away from the voters.
But is that responsible when you factor in our voter turnout?
Well, I don't.
And then on top
of
that,
good point.
I also want to ask, do you not think, Julie, that when we take it to a supermajority to 2/3, wouldn't that require a little more bipartisan participation? You know, the whole simple majority, you know, you have your pockets.
Well, that's why they set up these amendments at 2/3, right?
Absolutely.
Don't you think 2/3 would pretty much push that?
I understand an idealistic world, yes, that would mean that we would have, we could get bipartisan support on anything. In the polarized climate that we have now, and who knows where it's going to go in the next 10, 20, 30 years, I find it difficult to believe that we could get 2/3 of the legislature really to work together on anything if it had to do with working with, and I'm going to use air quotes here, the other side. I just find that, I think we're pulling the power back through the legislature, who are not well known for working together on most things, instead of letting the voters make their own decisions in the generations that they are. I mean, I don't foresee a state income tax in the near future. I just don't think it's going to happen.
Well, with that being said, I think the massive amounts of division are more on the national stage. I think in Texas, we have a lot more cooperation and bonding. So like me, I'm the chairman of the Denton County Young Republicans, but I'll work with Paige Dixon, who's the former chair of the Denton County Young Democrats, and we'll talk about stuff all the time. And what I think people understand in Texas, at least on the legislative level, that there's a lot more bonding. I mean,
are you saying more common ground?
More common ground.
Can we hit the button for that?
I think
I try and play into that, by the way.
And I think that the issue is making sure there's more of a limitation there. It's something that's happened very recently, which I think is a big point to make sure this has happened. I mean, you're familiar with the Dennis Bonin situation. A lot of people play ball with Austin. They don't play ball with their constituency.
Oh, totally agree.
And so
I like it too.
Yeah.
So what we need to do is make sure that that vote has a harder burden on the state legislators, and that we have the easier way for have a stronger vote with the American, with the Texas people, with Texans, so that way they can have their voice heard in a more proper way. And being able to do this gets rid of that establishment versus grassroots fight in the legislature with Democrats, Republicans, whatever it might be, and lets Texans have their voice be heard solely as one single unit. It's a bipartisan common ground.
But isn't this really like a ploy by the state with this banning of the state income tax to try and attract even more businesses? I mean, let's face it, a lot of people are moving to Texas. A lot of companies are moving to Texas. They see, hey, you know what, we're not going to pay any income tax. By making the statement, by the legislature making the statement, are they saying, yeah, please come, we want you here? Isn't that a good reason to have this?
I'm a strong supporter of like the Chamber of Commerce and working to get businesses in. So I agree that bringing businesses here, but can I segue?
I know where we're going.
Yeah, Sherry and I have this.
Individual.
Let's
talk about the language of the proposition itself, because I think that we both kind of establish our boundaries on Proposition 4 and whether we feel that it needs to be left as it is or add a layer of protection. So my guess, my comment is the way that the bill was, or the resolution was written by Representative Leach, used the word individual, and it's a very specific word. And I know it's kind of crazy, but in certain circles, the word individual can actually mean businesses, corporations.
Right. I saw that in all the readings.
So the Legislative Budget Board, which is a nonpartisan governmental agency, put a fiscal note on the House resolution that said, I'm gonna see if I can quote it here.
Are you talking about natural persons?
Yes. It said, let's see if I can find it. Well, I can't find it at the moment, but the fiscal note said that it would cause significant financial damage to our state because of the amount of revenue that could potentially be lost from the franchise tax. And we're talking about a tune of $4 billion. So a lot of, I think, Senator Royce West and Senator Nathan Johnson tried to put an amendment to the House resolution, asked Representative Leach to do so. And he said no, that it was a non-issue. And so even though that the fiscal note was in there, so on the very last day of the session, a conference committee, that's what they call it, worked together, was bipartisan, worked together and made a change to the tax code of all things. They submitted bill, I do have that one, HB 4542, which changed the definition of the word individual to read to natural person, so that it did not include any of the business. And so you're saying, yay, all's well that ends well. But here's the problem. It was very easy for them to change a definition in the tax bill or in the tax code then. So it could be very easy to change it back, and there would be very little attention paid to it. And so what that means is that businesses could potentially, I'm not saying that they would, but businesses could potentially sue the state of Texas, and we would have to defend those lawsuits, spending millions of dollars to say that they don't have to pay their franchise taxes.
I would like to know what Chris has to say about the natural person versus the individual situation.
Or is this for businesses as well? I mean, is this what this ban on taxes, or is it?
It's meant for personal income taxes. Right. It's not meant to ban where Jamba Juice gets to not pay any taxes anymore. That's not what the intention of the bill is. And so there's a lot of different ways we can go down. And you go down the rabbit hole, you can find tons of different stuff. Like, she has a valid point. What's making sure individual versus natural born citizen? There's a lot of legal speak that people don't typically understand as a normal everyday person. And so a word, like, that's why I asked her, what do you mean by this word all the time? My boss gets frustrated. I'm like, well, what does that mean to you? Like, I want to know what that means to you. And so in legal speak, like she's saying, she's exactly right, individual versus natural born person.
I always say in politics, actually a lot of aspects of life, pay closer attention to what's not being said. So if this was just something that was identified after the prop was agreed upon and it came about, that would be one thing. But it was brought up by some of our leaders to say, hey, we don't like this verbiage. Can we change it? And it was shot down. So doesn't that indicate that there is a reason? It was brought to everyone's attention, and yet we still decided to go with what's here. And I can't wrap my brain around that.
Well, it's the possibility. So there's also in modifications to a bill change the likelihood of a bill getting passed. They're already on a slim margin. And so, and so once you make any modifications, that lowers confidence in the bill. And so making any kind of crazy modifications could actually lower the chance and lower the confidence of the representatives to go vote on that bill to say that. And so they already had a slim margin anyway. So making that amendment, sure, I see how it could get worded that way, where how people could imagine and envision that it would say that businesses and franchise tax. I'm sure I can see that point of view, but I just don't think that that's necessarily feasible, nor is it necessarily going to actually happen. It'd be like, because if they can go and change the code like that whenever they want, then they can do that regardless, and that's a
right. So organizational it's approved issue. By 2/3, it's locked in pretty much the wording, isn't that true?
Yeah,
but not the tax code, which is not what Julie was saying.
That shows that the issue isn't the proposition; that would be the tax code
that's
itself.
Right.
And so we need to fix the tax code, not the proposition, because if we can make that a more solid stance to show and say what we're doing,
can we put it on a postcard? That's all I care about.
No, I mean, I'm all for flat tax, so everybody knows what it is. Put it on a postcard, let it go.
I do too. I mean, Julie and I might disagree on that, but I won't get into my personal feelings on that because I'm a moderator on the show. But go ahead. And then what about this position that teachers, all of a sudden a lot of teachers, okay. Is that where you're going to go?
I just wanted to say just one thing back where we talk about what that might not be the intention. Well, I'm not necessarily convinced that that's the truth because the Texas Monthly reported that the proposed ban on personal income tax that's flying through the legislature may also blow a hole in the state's business franchise tax, a tax that Governor Abbott has been said he wants to put in a coffin. So when
the, where are you quoting that from?
From Texas Monthly.
Okay.
So so when we talk about what's not being said, which is what Sherry said, I think that's a very real possibility in the future, and that one that that voters need to actually be aware of. And so going back to your comment about the teachers, and I love that you brought teachers in, because I'm a huge supporter of public education.
Me too.
Where we're going also.
I was on the FISD, you know.
I did not know that. Okay, well, nice.
Big support of teachers.
Thanks for doing that. So Texas American Federation of Teachers is against it. The Texas State Teachers Association is against it. Progress Texas, the Center for Public Policy Priorities, all very, very strong supporters of public education. They're all against it. And here's the reason why. Is because part in 1993, when we put the first amendment in against state income tax in, it's called the Bullock Amendment.
Bob Bullock.
Bobby Bullock.
No, his name is Bobby B. All right. So one of the things that was enshrined in the Constitution was that the income, any revenue stream from any state income tax that might someday put in, be put in place, went either to fund public education or to pay down property taxes, to reduce property taxes. Really good things, right? Mm-hmm. Something that this last legislative session really focused on. So another very puzzling thing to me is this new constitutional amendment, the proposed one, takes that safeguard out. There is no money, there is no restrictions on how that money can be spent. So no public education support and no property tax reduction. So that's another problem that I have. And obviously the teachers organizations, I mean, I've gone to their websites, that they use words like, don't be fooled. This is a trick, not a treat. I mean, very, you know, Halloween centric. Yeah. But it's not really funny because it's scary to me, and it's scare tactics. It's scare tactics to use to talk to people and tell them to ban state income taxes when there's so much more to it. It's deeper than
so
that.
So what do you think about that, Chris?
No, so I want to go to the first point of like actual versus like what we're talking about unbeing thought. So I'm going to take a shot at conservatives right now to kind of argue my point here. So net neutrality was a very big thing, and they're talking about how that was going to nickel and dime everybody. The cable companies were going to come after everybody because of how the wording was in the language. And we haven't seen any of that happen. We haven't seen any of this kind of wording and verbiage come across the board. And I'm for net neutrality, mind you. I don't stand with a lot of Republicans don't stand with me on that, but I'm for it. I think we should have.
Me too.
So,
common ground.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
Yeah, but I don't know that his team would probably.
Let's take that away. No, it's him. Well, okay.
My team, I'm the cybersecurity guy. I'm not trying to be an egotist when I say this, but a lot of people just don't understand.
What are these extra cameras in here all of a sudden? They were in here yesterday. Now all of a sudden they're coming in.
Don't worry, I've already got your email. Okay. No, just kidding.
And the password.
Yeah, I see that.
But like with net neutrality, I think that's a perfect example of the same kind of wording and situational awareness with it. And I think that all of your concerns are 100% valid. And I think that you're entirely intelligent. You understand everything. And so if you weren't, then I mean, Steve knows me. I call people out left and right. So yes. I wouldn't tell you. I wouldn't
left, right, and middle.
No. It's not going to blue wind up your skirt. That's what
hey, easy. Yeah. It's a family show.
But no, I think that using that net neutrality thing is a good argument, because they said all these things were going to happen, and I fought the net neutrality. I went against a lot of people in Frisco even. It's like, no, net neutrality is a good thing. And everything, I was like, this is what they're saying is going to happen. I was like, no, that's going to happen. And then nothing that they screamed was going to happen with banning net neutrality or keep nothing that the naysayers said that was all the wording and all the verbiage is going to hurt us actually did. And so it actually... I'm starting to get all muddled in my words a little bit. I apologize. But the situation was that there's a lot of openness and room for a margin for error in the phrasing and the wording, but the actual implementation of it was actually very safe for everybody. When you're talking about the school education and income, I think the school education and funding of school education is entirely vital and ridiculously important. I think that the best thing we can do is get as much money as possible to the classroom.
Well, we agree. But the thing is can we assume that that's really going to happen?
He's got a big butt in here.
Can we say Texas lottery?
Let's go in there a second, but I want to hear your buzz.
So there's another butt. Show altogether.
Yeah,
so
we should do a show on that.
That's so with that, a lot of funding just kind of, as you know, there's any kind of legislative funding typically is like, well, here's a bucket, figure it out. And then it goes to waste, it goes to bonuses, it goes to everything that doesn't actually help the students or the teachers. So it actually takes a lot of our stuff out of the conversation. And so what happens is they throw this money into a bucket, as Mr. Noskin here, Mr. FISD.
Please call me Steve.
Mr. Steve Noskin, just kidding, I'm just giving you a hard time. But Frisco ISD, how much money does Frisco ISD spend on a student on a monthly basis?
I didn't know once upon a time.
Now we're probably somewhere on. Go ahead.
Is it? I think I'm trying to think on the monthly basis.
Yearly money spent by the stays was somewhere around $7,800, $7,900, yeah. somewhere in there. Probably gotcha. Went up since I've been off the board.
So Kansas City ISD, which is where I come up from, and they spend $7,800 per student. And what guess what they have? They have all this information, all this infrastructure, and they lost their accreditation because no kids are going to school. The money's not going to the classroom. There's lots of information. So even if I would have graduated with a 4.5 GPA, all the classes I could have never went to a public college because the school lost their accreditation. Because money was getting thrown in a bucket and not going to the classroom. There was not a system in place to build in that organization to make sure that students were benefiting from that situation.
Okay, but so Texas isn't really in that same situation. I mean, this is kind of an apples and oranges.
Wait, we're also doing Prop 4, not school right now.
Okay, I'm so sorry. Yeah, we should have another thing on school
funding. We could go down that rabbit hole. If you were going to tie in Prop 4, sure. I just don't want
to. Well, I'm going to go back to, I really think that we need to leave well enough alone. I mean, that's a really good. Let's just leave it as it is, and we won't have a state income tax. We will still have money funding public education if one is ever passed, and lowering property taxes, which we all know is the darling of everybody in the state who's had to pay their property taxes.
Which doesn't happen.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And so those are super important. And so I don't want to, I mean, I could argue with you, probably on your same side about public education and the need for more funding and where it needs to go. But this is just... To me, it's just another example of how we should leave things alone and how this proposition is completely unnecessary. Things are working. If one were ever to pass, things would be working well. I mean, we would be addressing two of the state's major priorities, public education. And, you know, going back to what we talked about, I think Steve mentioned it too, bringing those businesses to the state. The best way to have a businesses come to the state, not just tax return. We got to have some good workers. We got to have well-educated, well-trained workers. We have to have families who want to bring their kids here because we have good schools. All those things are super important for our businesses. And our businesses are great community partners, and they are the ones who've been pushing for increased funding for education. So,
but do you think that those things would happen if we implemented a state tax?
I think what would happen is that we would hopefully, I mean, we obviously things would happen differently, but we would lower our property taxes. I mean, that's part of what
I was
going
to say. Yeah.
I mean, hopefully, I mean, I don't know where we're going, and we're going down a rabbit hole again of something that's not right. even being proposed. I just want to make that clear.
Yeah, general, right. general, like general
no, I get it.
Show,
I shouldn't have probably said that.
Yeah.
It's just, I guess it goes to then why would we not agree for a permanent ban, not the kind of thing.
Sure. Can't do that anyway. Yeah, you can't make that anyway.
No, I know. So then why be against Prop 4? I mean...
Yeah, I mean, if they could turn it around after the vote, then let the people speak, isn't
so,
it?
So I'm going to go back, though, to an example that we just used a little while ago when we were talking about how hard it is to get anything passed. Because you mentioned disgraced Speaker Bonin.
Yeah.
He was the
did you say disgraced?
Did you say that?
She threw that.
I did.
That was quick.
You know what? We're
going to
take a break right there.
Oh, man.
So hold that point. We're past the halfway mark, and this show just fly by fast, as you can see. So far, so good. Very good. And we're going to talk about our sponsors at this point. Our premier sponsor, by the way, is Elevated Roofing. You see the roofing problems we had in that last storm? My gosh, right? Can you believe that? Did you see that hole in Fort Worth by that Chevron station?
Yes, when the lightning hit.
It was like 15 feet wide.
It was the Terminator coming, you know, it's like how in the movie. Like
you know, some conspiracists think that, you know, this is Star Wars, and they did like a little test thing, like the government did a little test and shot a little hole in the ground.
I don't know what you're watching online.
I just read it online. But anyway, that hole was huge. But to get back to Elevated Roofing, they are the premier roofing contractor in North Texas. I don't know if you know, they're actually based here in Frisco Prosper, and they go to McKinney.
Right.
I actually use them on my roof, as our listeners know, and they're just a tremendous company. Their services is second to none. They have other divisions like their painting company, Elevated Painting, Elevated Gutters. And these guys are phenomenal, especially with service and follow-up. Getting the work done is one thing. And again, my personal salesperson, Kenny Gammons, actually met with my insurance company, which did pay to do it, but at first they didn't want to, and he met with them and showed them why I should get it. I actually sold the job for him, of course, but for me, because I did need the roof. But then the follow-up and the change, we picked a colored tile that went on the house, and we went in the backyard to look at it because that's where they started, and we're like, we hate it. And like,
don't you just love that?
Yeah. So they love that. They bring everybody by and they took it off. No problems. Came back with the color we wanted. Just tremendous service. And wow. You know, Sherry loves the fact that after they come by with these huge magnets and they pick up all the nails off the grass.
I've had my roof done. That is See? Not to be understated.
Yeah.
I
have. So if you, yeah, if
I've
you,
had my tires redone.
And I know I'm going a little long on them, but my listeners even tell me I talk too much about Elevated Roofing. But if you do need a roof, please support our premier sponsor, Elevated Roofing. Call them at 469-200-0582. That's 469-200-0582. Our other sponsor that Sherry wants to talk about is Bell and Sparrows. Go ahead, Sherry.
Bell and Sparrows. I love this group. It is a nonprofit faith-based entity. It is women-led, and they advocate for women and work with women globally and locally. They've done work in Haiti, Guatemala, and Portland, and actually in the Dallas area. I know they work with the Genesis group in Dallas a lot. I love these ladies. They're so passionate. I've been to one of their events, and it really is a bunch of hardcore working women in the room. And what they do is they reach out to women that have been incarcerated or suffer from addiction or other issues, and they try and pull them up. You know, sometimes you just need help, and they help them learn trades so then they can make a living and support themselves and their families. Just a really great group. And what I really liked is in the service that they're doing in Haiti, they've established partnerships on the ground there. So like they've put stuff on the ground and they keep building on top of that over and over, over time. So
great, really good for women, really good for people. And they're just, you know,
their sponsorship is paid for by
an anonymous donor.
Nice. Because that person, you know, loves them and believes.
So we're getting to the season of gift giving, right? And if you want to make a great donation to a really good organization, please go to bellandsparrows.org. That's B-E-L-L-E-N Sparrows, S-P-A-R-O-W-S.org, and make a contribution. You'll feel good. They'll be happy. It's a win-win. And lastly, real quick, our third sponsor is GetBloomly.com. If you're interested in getting a subscription of flowers, or if you have a corporation or a company that puts out flowers, you know, weekly, biweekly, these people actually customize your flowers. They work with you to make home deliveries decide what you want in your home to match your decor or whatever you want. They're a local based company as well in North Frisco. GetBloomly.com. Go to their website. Very reasonable price. Very good service. So there you go. That was only 4.5 minutes of commercial. Last time was a long time. So we're back here. We left it with Julie, who was making a great point. So I'm sorry I interrupted you.
It was a good point.
On that. So go ahead. Take us where we have to go, Julie.
Well, what I was trying to say, and I was slyly getting in a little dig at Dennis Bonin just because I found that whole situation disgraceful. But thank you. But one of the things that I found was interesting is that, so we had talked about earlier about why not just bring it to the supermajority. And so to even get this onto the ballot, this resolution onto the ballot, Dennis Bonin had to unusually vote. I mean, that doesn't usually happen. He had to flip it to 100 to get it in the House, to get it over. So just the fact that he had at that time, he had pretty much iron control over that caucus.
At that time.
No longer, of course. But at that time, he had iron control. And so if I just really worry that, again, we're putting all this power back to the legislature to control what our voters get to vote on. And that's a huge, huge point.
But that's why they're elected, right? To put up the different subjects to be voted on.
Well, yes, they're elected to put forth good legislation, good governance, as Chris and I have discussed. But they're not elected to vote in such a narrow fashion that all they're trying to do is to support their partisan agenda. They're trying to do the best that they can for Texas.
But if they were just trying to get their support, and I'm not taking a position, just their partisan, you know, supporters, then it wouldn't pass, right? The public wouldn't just vote for it.
I'm not convinced. I mean, I'm just talking about, just do you think about the marketing that we just heard over this particular proposition? Let me go to something else that has to do with good governance and marketing. So one of the, there was a PAC that was formed, Texans for Proposition 4. and there is exactly one donor to that PAC, although it's been touted as a grassroots support of this proposition. There's one donor for that. It's Leach for Texas. That's the campaign arm of Representative Leach, who is also the author of this resolution. He is the treasurer for the PAC. And yet this is used as part of the marketing about talking about how this is grassroots.
That's another topic for another show also because of these PACs and what they do. Yeah. But,
I'm just talking about that's the kind of marketing and the
language. I get what you're saying.
But don't you get that with any issue, really? I mean, you can get it from both sides.
I think her point is Leach should be representing the people that he represents. And when you start going in that direction.
You could argue that that's also in that. It's people elected him to do stuff like this, if that's what it
that's
is.
True.
And he's weaponizing what he knows to go ahead.
He very
and
much.
Good word, though, weaponizing. Do we really want to be weaponizing against our own?
Well, I think he's trying to say
No, important words.
No, I mean, I think she does. It's an important word. And weaponizing, you mean, weaponizing could be in defense or in offense.
Right. Either way,
but he has a point. I mean, he was elected by a majority mentality, right?
And what he's doing is he's going above and beyond of being just a normal representative to push a bill that I believe could fully benefit Texans as a whole. So he's putting in 150% effort to push this idea, this agenda.
I kind of get where you're coming from, because quite honestly, when Leach got elected, perhaps maybe there was more marketing, but then do we hold the people that are doing that accountable or
and
the people
it,
that
you know,
just don't
I know
vote?
We're getting off topic, but even Leach himself, he barely won last time, right? So
absolutely.
Maybe this is part of his way of increasing his support. Yes, but also it could hurt him, right? I mean, people who are against Prop 4 could really get actively against him. So, I mean, he's taking kind of a political gamble, isn't he?
Can we segue in then to, I do love that. No, I want to talk, because one of the things we talked about was who was against it, and we talked about the teachers. But I also wanted to get the very important point in is that every single, across the state, major newspaper or, reporting organization, except with the exception of Fort Worth, Star Telegram, is that what that is?
Yes.
Fort Worth.
Mm-hmm.
Every single one of them has come out against this proposition. And some of the quotes that were, so this was from Corpus Christi. So I'm going to do all over the state, not just around here.
And these are, and to be fair, are these left leaning?
Editorial. No. I'm going to read you every single major publication. I'll tell you who they are.
20 minutes.
I'm going to, talk really fast.
Okay.
So Corpus Christi, Caller Times, and Jeff Leach published an op-ed in that. They gave him the opportunity to rebut this. They said 10 amendments, all but one, would make Texas a better place. That was Proposition 4. Then they said the measure's flawed wording could allow courts to kill the business franchise test. That's Austin American Statement. Austin Chronicle. This is pure base scratching BS. Dallas Morning News, the state constitution already requires the approval of a majority of lawmakers and then a majority of voters. There's no need to clutter the constitution with unnecessary amendments.
She's got like 100 pages here.
I don't. I want to just find one more and then I'll stop.
Then I'll let Chris talk. Go ahead.
Yep. Let's see. Oh, shoot.
Pick your best one.
Okay. Oh, well. This is political pandering of the worst sort, given that it's already nearly impossible to create a state income tax without voter approval.
Who said
that? That was the Waco Tribune Herald.
The Waco Tribune? Come on.
Like, so surprised.
Well, I mean, to be fair, two Austin newspapers, Dallas Morning News, Waco Tribune, those are all left-leaning articles, 100%. Dallas Morning News
is not left-leaning.
I don't know.
I always get debates on that, but that's another topic.
It is another topic.
I would disagree with you on Austin.
Yeah, write that down.
Yes, ma'am.
Hurry up. Go ahead, Chris. So talk about these.
There's one from East Texas if you want that. That's not.
she is showing preponderance of many.
Well, and I get curious if people are talking about how you vote on a constitutional amendment, because there's the administrative procedure that you have to vote for the ban, so you have to vote yes for this. So there's a procedure there that can be very misguiding and misleading, but that's with anything that's going to go there. That doesn't matter. That's not responded to this proposition at all. That's responded to how the bill gets written out. So voting for a ban or voting for the proposition 4, like you have to vote yes to stop income tax. Like it's a stretch, right? And I agree that that's a stretch. It can almost feel misleading, but That's clerical and administrative situation with any kind of constitutional amendments or anything like that. So that's something that if we wanted to vote for a ban on anything, we'd vote yes for the ban on anything.
Well, but that's not what I'm sorry. I can't read the whole thing because I don't want to take up the whole show. But the quotes make it very clear that they are coming out against this proposition for a variety of reasons. And I didn't even read the TSTA and the TSAF.
Well, you're talking about like the franchise tax.
But let's get down to why they are against it. I mean, so we got the two issues basically, and I don't want to summarize for anybody, but it seems like we want to have that ability to change it readily. And that's why we don't want to have a constitutional amendment. Is that basically your point?
Well, yes. Mm-hmm. Unnecessary ties the hands of future Texans. And that doesn't even get back. I mean, where we really should focus a little bit more on the danger to our franchise tax.
Right. And I wanted to address the franchise tax with Chris. So, and your point is, hey, we believe as a state, at least today, that we should have no income tax. Why don't we make this statement by putting it as an amendment to the Constitution? Yes. Is that basically the pro position, right?
Right, yeah. So just it's raising the bar on requirements.
So to answer what Julie said, the franchise tax is really, I think, the divide, isn't it? If we can secure that it's just for individuals and doesn't affect corporations. Because that's what I'm gathering from listening. Other than the teacher with the teachers with the revenue, these the schools with the revenues, et cetera, et cetera. And I know you have other points. I'm not trying
I was just laughing. It's just that you said, so we're against it for this reason, and then there's this reason, and then leaving aside the teacher issue.
Well, I can give all the pro reasons why it's I'm just saying.
But the pro reason is basically we just want to make it a higher bar. I mean, that's pretty much their pro reason.
Are there any other reasons that you would suggest for the pro other than making it the higher bar?
No, I mean, I think that that is the big reason. I mean, the situation is...
Okay, so wait. Okay, common ground. Let me ask this then. So me as a voter, and I haven't voted yet.
You will.
Oh, I'm an election day voter.
I've been voting since
I was raised right. I've been voting since I was 18.
I think we can vote today, right?
See, we all have...
Yes, you can. By the way, audience, you can vote through the first, right? Yep.
Yes,
through the first. So get it in this weekend.
Well, that's...
And then election, yes.
Wait, I think, can you vote on Saturday still?
I thought you couldn't.
No, not on Saturday.
Okay, it was last Saturday.
Sorry.
I think it goes after today, Tuesday. And
so you have today, right. And then you have the 5th. So if we think right now we need to spend all this time, money, effort, and get everybody to vote on it because we need to make it the standard higher, you just said that.
Yeah.
Does that mean I'm supposed to assume that the standard wasn't responsible in the first place? And so
since 1993,
I'm sort of the type of person, okay, we need to do this. Tell me why. Well, I need somebody to provide to me why this is so necessary. And other than just making it harder is kind of what I have most found.
Yeah. So, talk about your email password for a second. That has everything to do with all of your identity and everything. And a lot of that is about raising the bar, and your password started to be 8 characters. Now it's 12 characters.
Yeah, there's too many now.
Hold on. But that is a resulting consequence to losers trying to do little and take advantage of someone that they don't have permission to. So it's we can take that parallel as a comparison.
Well, you're just saying raising the bar on any type of thing. That's all.
Yeah, and you have a best practices kind of scenario with anything that's going to change over time. And right now, what we said, I don't think it's necessarily a partisan push. I think a lot of people are pushing that, but I know people that live in like South Texas, like McAllen, that are not Republican at all.
I know lots of people that don't do party.
And let's face it, Julie, a lot of people that are moving to the state are Democrats, obviously, because now the influx in Texas, they're talking about how it could turn blue. I mean, you're getting a lot of Californians coming in and New Yorkers coming in, people from Jersey. And that one of the draws is
they're coming because we don't have a state tax.
That's what I'm saying.
But so here's this idea. So, do you think that our state legislator is very effective?
It really depends on what you're talking about.
I think generally, no. I think they're very slow to get things enacted. I mean, we were supposed to get property taxes handled, and property taxes did not get handled. We're supposed to be able to kind of pushing towards and switching to a consumption-based tax, where it's a higher sales tax, no property tax, so people can go ahead.
Should we give Chris a warning? You might want to slow down.
But we had a lot of things that were supposed to get done. Zero Republican priorities got passed. And I'm not trying to make this.
He's saying as it is. I like that.
I know, me too.
But we need right now we sit with a sluggish organization. And so I'm more worried about yes, we need to raise the bar. So this organization that has not passed priorities that people have put in front of them, our elected leaders on both sides of the aisle, TDP or RPT, have not gotten their things passed, that is currently sitting on a sluggish situation where things aren't moving. And so do we want to leave a bar where people can go ahead and not do what the people want? Or do we want to have a bar raised to where they have more of the people's voice in there, that they have to do more of what the people want?
So let me just clarify what you said, so I understand. You said you don't think that the legislature is very effective, right?
Right. And there's a scale.
Okay. Absolutely. I agree. Sure. Some are more effective than others.
Right.
So then, if that is the case, why is it that we want to put more power in the hands of the legislature to make it a higher bar for them to vote in order to give the voters an opportunity to make their decision on state income tax? Because why do we want it there? Why don't we want it with us?
Well, it raises both bars, technically. So what you're doing, instead of a majority, you're going to the two-thirds vote. So then we have the election, which we have to handle, which is why we don't have term limits, because our voices is our term limits, right? And so
we had a show on term limits, you know.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. It was a good show. Go ahead.
Very cool.
Sorry.
I wish it were available for viewing, but I didn't see that one.
It is on our website, commongroundtx.com, and you can see all our shows.
I want to.
And so why we need that two-thirds vote, and to increase that to be able to go to the people's vote, is because it's a higher barrier to entry before it comes to us. So we need to make sure that our legislators are listening to us before it comes and wastes our time. And so it raises the bar across the board, to make sure that before any substantial thing is done, there's a lot of bipartisan effort, that it's a Texan effort, because two-thirds is not a Republican majority. Two-thirds is not Democrat majority. Two-thirds is bipartisan majority across the board. And that means that it's all Texans' voices being heard there. And while the legislator might be slow to act, when grassroots on both sides speak and get work done, you see change. Like, as you mentioned, with disgraced speaker Dennis Bond.
Whoa, disgraced speaker.
You did use disgraced speaker. Wow. Well, it's kind of hard to work.
I mean, I have a lot of friends that are on his staff, and they're fantastic, amazing, sure wholehearted people. But
I don't hate what he's saying. Tell me why we don't like it.
Why we don't like it. Okay. I don't hate what you're saying either. No, absolutely. I understand what you're saying. And I'm going to go back to that term I used either, in an ideal world. But that's not the way that things function right now. And it isn't the way things have been functioning for a while. So what I foresee seeing, and what a lot of people who are against it foresee seeing, is that what that's going to do is you're going to, if we remain in this partisan, and let me just kind of switch it a minute. I mean, if for example, things do switch and the Democrats do take control of the House or the Senate or both, or however it works, or neither, whatever happens, but eventually it will happen, then you're going to be on the opposite side, and you're going to have two-thirds, maybe the Democrats, just throwing out various things that are not supportive of a conservative viewpoint.
Elections have consequences.
But right? I think, okay, if you're talking about them agreeing on, I don't know, the lottery or whatever, that's one thing. I think when it comes to property taxes, like, there's a lot of amendments
or income
on
tax?
There's 10 amendments on here that I know the majority of Texans are completely unaware of, except for Prop 4. Right. It's kind of like you could have a list of 200. And when you say property taxes or state income tax, all of a sudden the non-voting, non-listening person is like, huh? Somebody say they something.
Exactly. So, that is true.
So,
or like alcohol in Frisco.
Yeah. So I get what you're saying, but I also think a lot of it has to do with what we're talking about. That would kind of drive that.
Yeah.
But I just don't want to leave it in a vacuum too. I mean, your comment is your argument for it is it's a higher bar. Okay, and I get that. But we cannot exclude the very important points that I mentioned: the school funding, the property tax reduction,
the verbiage,
the
whole individual,
and the fact that we could potentially lose millions in lawsuits, even if it didn't pass. I mean, even if the lawsuits were unsuccessful eventually, but we'd still spend millions defending a franchise tax that has already been stated as a governor's.
So that's come up a couple of times. What do you think about that franchise tax dilemma that the state might have? Is that a possibility?
I know they have a goal to get rid of it. I know they're trying to streamline tax system, and they have a goal for it. And I still just think it's a stretch in the bill. I think that there's, like she said, that there's a vulnerability there. But like we mentioned with net neutrality, there's all that vulnerability there, and it didn't happen. And there's lots of bills that are not going to be perfect bills across the board. And there's lots of issues with things. But what's going to actually tangibly happen, like actionable items, cybersecurity talk again, like they talk about that Spectre malware that's going to affect everybody's Intel processors. Like, it's already blocked. And so there's no way for it to affect or actually enact on anything. So it's not an actual item. There's lots of fear mongering that goes around. And that's not a partisan specific thing, fear mongering. That's all across the board. Everybody wants to do that. And so, but there's a very big part of actionable items. So I think that there's might be a window for where somebody's going to try to take advantage of that. And somebody's going to try to push for that. But I don't think that the actionable item is actually there to do anything, because situationally Texans run as a family. And so if you find somebody, if you see ABC franchise is going to go try to sue Texas because they want to take advantage of a bill, Texans are going to go to come to bat. I mean, look what we do with Chick-fil-A. We came to bat for Chick-fil-A when somebody felt like they were attacking Chick-fil-A. I mean, Texans are a family, like blue or red, like we're together. And like, if I saw you on the side of the road, your car was hurt, I was like, that's Julie. I'm not going to be like, oh, she's a Democrat, whatever.
Yeah,
I
mean,
no, gonna say, I don't know.
I'm going to be like, true. Look at the hurricanes in Houston. I mean, people just care. They didn't care.
Texas is a family. You don't see that almost anywhere else except for Louisiana.
Okay, so then let's, let's just say that you might be right. I'll just say that. If you were, but why fix what ain't broke? I mean, we already don't have a state income tax.
Well, why is the V6? You want something better, right?
But it's not better. We don't have a state income tax, period. And it's not going to happen.
Like, we are arguing over something that doesn't exist.
So why fix what ain't broke? We don't need to fix something that isn't, I mean, in today's political climate, it's never going to happen. I mean, it's just not going to happen because you start talking about, as you said,
I have to agree. Usually when a board, and I'm speaking from HOA, you know, we don't like to go to work and change, especially DCCRs, which we're doing. You don't want to go to work to change that and ask the majority of the people to vote on it unless you have a reason. Like, what are we trying to get done here? So that goes back to my question earlier. Why are we raising the bar? So the current bar wasn't good enough?
No, or else we would, and I trust Representative Leach and his judgment on all of this.
And what do we have as an example proving that it wasn't good enough? Because I'll tell you, I don't know anybody that agrees they want a state tax in the state of Texas. And I run with red and blue team. Like, do y'all know anybody that would prefer a state tax?
I do. I know most people said they
I know people on both sides. I've talked to people, and I think people like the mandate part to draw more businesses in. That's the part. And I've talked to people, you know, in our education community that say things that you have, Julie. So I see both parts, and that's why we really wanted to have the discussion. And I think it's been good so far.
And something I do think too is I think most of the opposition, most of it, and this is just my hunch, but most of it is from the Democrat side of the aisle. There's opposing Prop 4. Is that, would you agree with that or no?
Well, I would in a certain narrow definition, but when you're talking about teachers,
for sure,
that is absolutely bipartisan. You've got 100%. A lot of Republican teachers, and they're against it as well.
So my thing, at least as far as the Democrat side goes, like having a 2/3 majority means that the Democrats have more of a voice in getting something passed. And if this passes, they have more of a voice and more of a playing card for strategy later on down the line. So let's say that Texas goes further red. I don't think Texas is ever going to get 2/3 Republican in the House or in the Senate. So they have the Democrats actually have a bigger voice with this being said. This actually amplifies their voice in the House.
Isn't that true? Since they do need 2/3, it is pretty much, as we've said early in this conversation, that is going to be more bipartisan.
Yeah, that is true. Well, a simple majority seems like it would be much easier for the Republicans.
Well, that's what that pastors are meant.
But the Republican, for the most part, to go with your earlier point, the Republicans don't want a state income tax. So that would never be something that they would push for.
Right. And so that's what I'm saying is that now, even if they want to ban or if they want to make a move, like it does push a more.
Are we over time?
No.
No, I hit the mic with it.
Sorry, I thought you were gesturing.
She's over there. She's to leave or something. I don't know.
At least on that part, I think it encourages more bipartisanship. And I think that we had a lot of strong bipartisanship this session. We had people like Pancho Navarez working on things. He even said he'd bring a Second Amendment bill, the constitutional carry bill. He would hear it. And that's
I was surprised to hear that
before.
Too. But
and there's a lot. I think there's a lot of bipartisan work that happened. And there's a lot of nonpartisan work that happened this session as well. But I think that with that, just on that level, that increases partisanship there. And if they go full blue, if we turn blue, then Republicans and Democrats have to work together for that. And I think that's just it puts more of a weight on everybody coming together for it. I think that's a very strong part. As far as the teachers, our education funding system in itself is flawed.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, wow.
So even if the state income tax,
I'm not going to say it.
Even if we got a state income tax, none of that guarantees that their issues would be resolved. I mean, and so what we have to do is make sure the money's going to the classroom, not the bureaucracy. The money's going to take care of these teachers that are serving, that are spending their own paychecks on crayons, papers, all that stuff. But that money's going to them and supporting them. So you don't have a single mom who's a teacher spending her own money that she could be feeding her own kids with and spending crayons and buying school supplies for the kids in her school.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with
and
all
so
that.
And so that's a problem before, I think that's a problem before the income tax argument happens, that our education system funding is flawed.
So we only have a couple minutes left. So Julie, why don't you give us
a bottom line?
Yeah, you could just give us your summary of this and you know what you'd like to see in a couple minutes, and then Chris, and then we could actually run the show as long as we want today, but we like to stick to an hour. So go ahead.
Okay. So bottom line is, no one is proposing a state income tax. There's not anything on the paper there may always be a few people, but no one is really, and in this political climate, it would be political suicide. So this bill is unnecessary. Then when we add in, so even if you wanted to say that you wanted a higher bar, which, you know, I can understand that particular argument. We are hamstringing our future generations, making decisions for them to make their lives potentially more difficult in an economic climate that may be very different. Add in the fact that it takes away the public school funding, the property tax reduction, and the very difficult wording that could or could not cost our state potentially billions in revenue. I vote no to leave it, and let's leave it constitutionally enshrined as no state income tax right now as it is.
Okay, Chris, and your summary on this?
Yeah, my summary, I mean, she's right. There's not a ton of people calling for a state income tax, so I agree with her there, and Julie's been very respectful, and I appreciate that very much. There's lots of people who get very heated in any kind of conversation, but...
I'm dead over you.
So,
wow, I love the love here.
There's a lot of, like, she's saying that nobody's calling for that, but then they also said that nobody's coming for your guns, and then Beto said on the debate stage that, hell yes, we're going to take your AR-15. So how long is it until that happens where, hell yes, we're coming for your income taxes? All bills are decisions for future generations, every single one of them, whether it's a tax bill, whether it's a road, whether it's a tollway, all of that is assumed for future generations. That's what the legislature does. And I think that's she's making a very valid point. She wants to make sure we're not getting overly hamstrung, but I think we're more enabling the future taxes with this bill. And I 100% agree with her on the wording of the bill. It should be more streamlined and more clear. I agree with you on that. I think that we should have a better way to get the message across. We should fix things, and they should be researched a little bit further, so that way we don't have to worry about having a potential for fraud, waste, and abuse. But I think that the benefits from the bill, from the proposition, are more beneficial for Texans than not. So,
I actually agree. I think, honestly, if it doesn't pass, I think the verbiage. Oh, yeah, sorry. I think the verbiage will be playing a role.
Yeah, I mean, if it doesn't pass, I agree. The verbiage was kind of not sketchy. I don't want to say that, but was
as strong as it should be.
Yeah, that was good. But thank you so much for our guests, Julie and Chris, for coming in. I think it was a really good discussion. I'd like to get you guys back on a future show. I think it was really good that we could talk this out and talk about the different opinions on it. Thank you so much. Again, like to thank our sponsors, Elevated Roofing and Bell and Sparrows, GetBloomy.com. Next week's show, do we have a topic yet?
Not yet.
We're working on a lot of good topics. We're just trying to get guests. It's always hard to get guests. But now that we're doing some more.
Can I give them a plug and tell it was really fun?
You could say whatever you want.
Everybody always says it's fun.
It's a great show. Yeah, actually. And we're trying to get more widespread so that we can get a larger audience, because I think that we bring a perspective and a show that no one else has.
I agree.
It's really important for people to talk. And that's, you know, our basis for this show was to bring people together and have an open discussion instead of people digging their feet in the sand and saying, you know what, no, you're wrong. And then that's the end of it. So common ground's really important. It's what made this country great. Debate, compromise. People can talk. We're all Americans. We all have our own values. You know, of course, we all believe family first. But at the end of the day, we all have to work together to make this society better. So that's what the show's for. And thank you so much for coming. I'm rambling. And thank you, Sherry Salas. And we'll hope to see you guys very soon. Thank you so much. Take care.